Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Song is about some books. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Everybody, and welcome to Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine. I am your co-host, Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy.
Sydney,
How are you feeling over there?
Bad. I feel bad. It's the day after Thanksgiving, a Black Friday, and it has certainly been a black one for me. My stomach is doing things I did not know it was capable of any longer. Not since my preteen years of eating my entire Easter basket have I experienced this level of tummy distress.
That's not good.
No, so, it's actively bad, actually.
I'm assuming then you're not going to be doing any Black Friday shopping as a result?
No.
Except for that you went out to buy the ingredients to make macaroons, so, like, Macaroy, you're not doing too bad.
McElroy macaroons are a Black Friday tradition. They go all the way back to last year when I made them.
So would you say that you overindulged yesterday, Justin, on Turkey Day? You should have done what I did and play football to work off some of those K-cows.
Can't. My gout's too bad. My ankle.
He doesn't have gout.
You said
he
I might have gout.
Have gout.
You said there's a chance I had gout.
Could I just, at this moment, just, it's totally, it has nothing to do with anything. I would just like to mention that I scored 2 touchdowns yesterday.
You're right, but I'm glad that you got that in here.
I think that my public persona is kind of a little nerdy, right? You know,
I like science
and history, and like none of those things are particularly sexy. But I'm also cool now because I'm a sporto. I'm
good,
sporty.
Good touchdown girl.
I am. I did 2 good touchdowns. My daddy was very proud of me.
He was.
He gave me 2 high fives.
Whoa.
And I'm feeling great. And I'm sorry that you're not.
Yeah, but why am I not?
Well, I mean, probably just because you ate a whole lot.
Yeah, I don't think it was more than I've normally eaten. I think something more sinister is going on here.
Well, I mean, I guess it's always possible since yesterday was a day that entirely centered around eating lots of food that we all prepared ourselves. Not that any of us in our family don't know how to cook, but when you're cooking mass quantities for lots of people and you're under a lot of time crunch, sometimes maybe you cut some corners and maybe stuff doesn't get completely done, and
not in my kitchen, but I think I'm sure in some people's kitchen that is de rigueur,
and that could be a setup for maybe a little food poisoning,
or maybe a setup for an episode about food poisoning.
Could be sure, either way, both of those things. So why don't we talk a little bit about what might be going on inside your tummy right now?
Okay, I guess I'm ready for that.
So first of all, thank you to Hannah and Ariel for suggesting the topic of food poisoning in general. But let's start with what could be going on with you, Justin, which is salmonella.
Yeah, I know that one because it's the one that Lysol was invented to fight from their commercials.
That's what you know about salmonella. You know something else about salmonella.
Salmonella looks like little squiggly lines, and it's left behind by raw chicken.
Okay,
and
I mean,
if you spray Lysol on the squiggly lines, they dissipate for 99.9%.
Okay, well,
that's what I've learned.
Sure. Salmonella is a bacteria, not a squiggly line.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked a lot about salmonella actually already. I don't know if you realize this, because it's the salmonella family. The salmonella family of products is responsible for typhoid.
Oh, yeah.
Which, remember, we talked about.
I forget that sometimes, but I do know that somewhere.
But there are like less dangerous serovars of salmonella that cause, I mean, unpleasant foodborne illness, but are much less likely to kill you. You know, you won't, you don't get quite as sick as you do with typhoid. You know what's crazy is salmonella was actually the first of the foodborne pathogens that we isolated and knew caused illness, like before E. coli or Shigella or any of the other things we think of as, like, you know, food poisoning type items.
I always think of it as like the most boring regular type of food poisoning.
Salmonella?
Like, salmonella is like the chicken of food poisoning. Because it's like it got really hot for got really hot for a while. Like for a while, everybody was talking about it. For a while, it really seemed like chicken was out to get us. Chicken was finally going to strike back.
When was it really hot?
Like, do you remember when Lysol got like really angry about salmonella?
All you know is Lysol. This is what I'm getting is the only thing you know about salmonella is Lysol.
It just, there was a lot of commercials there for a while. And like, it would be black and white, but the chicken would leave behind purple squiggly lines. And it's like, wow, it's how people must have felt when germ theory was invented. Like, oh man, that's not just like slime. There's like, there's lots of germs in there and stuff. I hate it.
I think people get nervous about salmonella because, you know, it has something to do with chicken and we eat a lot of chicken. That's more my theory.
Yeah, that could be it too.
There have been, and this is probably what you're referencing, there have been outbreaks of salmonella in the U.S. In recent years that are like highly, you know, publicized and the media talks a lot about them. It's interesting though, we always associate salmonella with chicken and certainly it can be in poultry and turkey as well, which is why we're talking about it day after Thanksgiving. But it also, you know, from some of the outbreaks we've had, you know that it's spinach has been the culprit. Beef, which we don't ever think about, can carry salmonella. Eggs, peanut butter actually a couple times has caused some big outbreaks of salmonella. But certainly chicken too. I think even really recently in the last couple months there's been some recalls on some different like chicken type products, like some breaded, like pre-prepared frozen breaded chicken and chicken cordon bleu and stuff that was associated with some salmonella. And of course, when you get salmonella in, you know, like the enterica strains is what we're talking about that aren't the non-typhoid ones, basically the non-typhoid strains, you're mainly going to get like nausea, vomiting, your stomach's going to cramp, you're going to get diarrhea. Let's see. This would be about the sweet spot in terms of when that's going to start happening for you, because we're between 12 and 72 hours out from when you ate. Well, so basically, I'm asking how are you feeling?
I mean, never very good.
Like, never?
I've pretty much like had a bad tummy since I was like 25, just like every day.
Well, I don't think you've had salmonella since you were 25.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, I'm about baseline, but my baseline is pretty bad. Like my whole family has pretty rough tummies, I would say, 24/7.
That's true. That's very true. Well, salmonella is only going to last you about 4 to 7 days. The big thing is just to stay hydrated. And you know, and that's true with anything that causes you to puke and poop a lot, just like, try not to lose a lot of fluid and replace what you do lose. So, and by that, I don't mean like take Imodium. I just mean like drink a lot of water and Gatorade. Pedialyte is actually great for this.
So no real medicine could help?
No, I mean, there are antibiotics that we can give you. And certainly if you already have certain chronic diseases that might make it harder for you to get over something like this, if you're, you know, in a vulnerable part of the population, like the very old or the very young, or if you just get really sick for whatever reason from it, we can give you antibiotics. There are lots of different classes that can be helpful. But for most of us, we don't really recommend even taking antibiotics for it because it really doesn't help that much with your symptoms. Mm. And it will actually cause you to continue to shed the bacteria. Shed is the word I just used.
Okay.
We are still a profanity-free show. But you will shed it in your stool.
Okay, so yeah,
for longer if you take antibiotics. And that's not a good thing because when it's coming out in your stool, that's when we worry about. Remember my favorite route of transmission,
the fecal oral,
the good old fecal oral route. Oh. That's how that happens, is because you're wiping and you're not washing, which is never a good plan. So you know, if you're most people really shouldn't take antibiotics. You should just grab your Gatorade and take a few days off work.
Why is Lysol so upset about salmonella then? Is it because of the kids? Please, somebody think of the kids and their salmonella.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's an easy thing to educate people about, and it's a good way to sell your product probably, because a lot of us, like I said, I mean, unless you don't eat meat, you probably eat chicken maybe more than other meats. I don't know. I feel like we do.
Yeah, I would say a good amount.
Like, I mean, chicken is a very, is like a staple for most people, and you can buy a lot of it. It's good for feeding lots of people. And raw chicken oozes and you get goop and everything everywhere. And so it's like a, it's a good reason to have Lysol, I guess.
Yeah.
I think it's just a great way to sell it. It's a good marketing campaign.
For sure. Like, you got to be clean for some reason.
So why not? Why not salmonella?
Why not salmonella?
The other place that salmonella lurks, in addition to chicken, though, the other big thing that we don't talk enough about are reptiles. And I thought this was an interesting fact. So, you know, have you heard this before? Turtles and iguanas?
No.
Specifically, green iguanas and red-eared slider turtles.
Okay. Are either of those teenage or mutant?
Not to my knowledge.
I'm not that familiar with turtles.
I don't think that's what the salmonella does to them.
Is that, wow. I used to think it was mutagenic ooze, but apparently it was just plain old everyday salmonella has a different effect on turtles.
In 1975, I think this is great. So yes, reptiles can carry salmonella. And that's a fear if you're going to let your kid, or I mean, if you're an adult, you can own a turtle too. But I mean, the big fear was like if your kid wanted a turtle. So the FDA issued a regulation, a law in 1975 called the 4-inch law or the 4-inch regulation.
Mm-hmm.
And what it said was that any turtles sold in the U.S. had to have a carapace that was at least 4 inches in length. And do you know what that is? What a carapace is?
Yeah, their shell.
Yes. Well, specifically, it's the dome-shaped back part of the shell.
In EverQuest, items you can get carapaces.
This is video games again. That's just, that's good.
They're very educational.
Apparently about turtle
Not
shells.
Just Pac-Man anymore, folks.
So they had to be at least 4 inches long, the top part of the shell, because basically it would be harder for the kid to fit the turtle in their mouth if they were at least that long.
That's awesome.
That's
a great law.
That was the worry, was that kids were going to get these turtles and then stick them in their mouths and then get salmonella. And I believe that having a kid now, they stick everything in their mouths. So yeah, they'd probably stick the turtle in their mouth. Probably, right?
Do you know
Charlie would?
Do you know how chill things must have been for the Food and Drug Administration that they like took a day? It's like, let's get this turtle thing figured out. Kids are putting turtles in their mouths like crazy. Like, why is it just, you know, there's actually, if you want to get, as a parent, here's just something I've learned. About half of the things that there are small enough to fit in a baby's mouth. Like, if you've got, and will kill them. Like, if you have a determined baby, a determined suicidal baby, like, they'll jam anything in there. Can we pass the 4-inch law on everything? Like, nothing can be smaller than 4 inches at all.
Let's just treat everything like it's draped in salmonella.
Right.
Not just turtles. I wanted to talk a little bit. There are a lot of different bacteria that can cause food poisoning. And frankly, a lot of them can, deserve their own episode. Salmonella just doesn't now because I already took out the big gun, typhoid. So I want to talk in general a little bit about foodborne illness. It's been known, I love this term, throughout history as death in the pot. Is what you called it when somebody died from, I don't know, they ate something and they got sick and they died and and we didn't understand why because we didn't know anything about bacteria or germs
but
or anything.
But there was death in the pot. It was a new recipe. It said a half cup death and I thought, well, that sounds like a lot, but okay, when in Rome.
Actually, that's very apt because the Romans used these lead pots and then they seeped into their food and they probably all got lead poisoning from it. That's a really great... But that's a whole other story.
Yeah, I knew that. No, I knew that anecdote. That's why I decided to go there.
We've known that different foods or different forms of food, as in like raw food or whatever, has been dangerous since ancient times. We know this because we have studied like mummies and bog bodies and skeletons and coprolites.
Coprolites. I'm not familiar.
It's like old, like mummified poop.
Charming.
And found like parasites and bacteria and all kind, you know, evidence that people got sick and got certain different kinds of, you know, foodborne illnesses all throughout ancient times. Although nobody probably knew that that's what they had or that that's what their, you know, family or friends had died of. In the beginning, we probably just figured out what not to eat by either watching what food animals avoided, other animals, you know, the saber-toothed tiger won't eat that. So this is like a Flintstone history. So I won't eat it either. Or trial and error. Or like, did you see what happened when Bob ate that?
I think we do have some understanding that food that is cooked through. I don't know if this is like epigenetic or just learned or whatever, but I think that we do have some sort of inherent revulsion to meat that is not finished being cooked. Like, I think there is some genetic, like, some trigger that we have for meat that is not all the way done.
Well, we may have touched on this once before, but it's really interesting, the concept of like disgust, mm-hmm. you know, like right. you're like being disgusted, something, finding something gross or disgusting is, it's an advantage. It's an evolutionary advantage. It is something that we have developed. The things that we tend to just naturally find gross and repulse us and we wouldn't want to put in our mouths tend to be things that could make us sick. So there's a reason that when you see, you know, like a wound that's infected and is oozing with pus, that you go, ugh, and try to stay away from it, because that's your, you know, your DNA's way of saying there's bacteria there.
Right.
Stay away, right. Stay away. And food that's rotten, probably, you know, it's the same idea. Mm-hmm. Some of it certainly is learned. But yeah, I mean, there is something innate, something that, you know, something animal about that, avoiding things that make you sick. Huh. Of course, there are biblical references to certain foods that you should avoid because they could cause illness or different ways to prepare food. And a lot of this could have been, you know, connected to, I mean, there was the idea of things that were, clean in a spiritual sense, but also things that were clean in a very practical sense,
right.
You know. Hippocrates actually used to advise his patients to either boil their water, and later he even developed a filter to use for water. Not really, again, not understanding that there could be anything in the water that might make people sick, you know, any kind of food poisoning or water poisoning or anything like that. He just noted that clean water tasted better. And so stuff that smelled or looked dirty, he wanted cleaner just because he thought it tasted better.
His filtering thing had to be madness, right? Like, three old t-shirts and some herbs that he found and whatever.
what kind of t-shirts did Hippocrates wear, do you think?
Well, he had somebody from like different bands of his friends, you know, they weren't in anymore, that he just had like a pile that he would use just for filtering water.
You think Hippocrates was the kind of guy who just collected all of his old t-shirts and just wore them for years, you know, like after they got faded and like holy and everything?
It's not intentional. It's like one day you wake up and you're like, where did all these t-shirts come from? And then you decide to use them as filters.
Is this you or Hippocrates we're talking about now?
I would never go through the trouble of like filtering my water, and I care too much about my old t-shirts.
In ancient Greece and Rome, we knew there was, you know, it's evidence that we knew not to eat diseased animals, mm-hmm. that we had some understanding that we would get sick. And we know that we already understood that because people used to try to hide it. People used to try to cover up if the animals, you know, people who would sell, butchers who would kill and sell animals, would try to hide that the animals had been sick
draw a smiley face on them, that kind of thing.
No, on the steak? No.
Yeah, just draw a smiley face on the steak. You could see it's good. It's a good steak. Very happy. Very happy.
No. By once they had slaughtered the animals, they would treat the meat with nutmeg, because nutmeg would hide the taste and smell of decaying, rotted meat.
Ugh.
And this, for a long time, nutmeg was really, even today, I think nutmeg is used in a lot of like sausages and hot dogs, and that's where this comes from.
Oh, man.
Well, not because they're rotten now, but because of this like link with meat. It was so closely associated with meat because it was used to hide that we're selling you diseased, rotten meat.
It's like I can't even enjoy sausages anymore.
And there's a whole lot. If you want to talk about the history of adulterating food, of like trying to change food and drink that we know is dangerous in order to sell more of it, there are laws against this like hundreds of years back, because people have been trying to sell each other rotten meat as long as we've been trying to sell each other meat. Pliny,
yeah,
warned about this.
No, he had to weigh in.
Pliny the Elder, he, of course, when it came to wine, he warned specifically that there were some wine sellers who would taint their wine with some noxious herbs, some stuff that would end up making you sick, as a way of making it appear fresher and brighter and more flavorful.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd get really sick from the stuff that they were putting in.
Who even wants fresh wine? Didn't they know back then that it's like better if you wait like 100 years or whatever?
I don't think it's 100 years.
I don't think it's 100 years.
Either. We obviously don't know what we're talking about.
We don't actually know exactly how long you need to age your wine.
As we move through history, you know, at first we thought that like some food might make you sick because of something we, you know, we couldn't understand. Maybe there was some sort of chemical property or something like that, a toxin. You know, this is after we stopped thinking it was like a punishment from the gods. There were some experiments done in the 1700s by Albrecht von Haller, who did a lot for the study of physiology. But one of the things he dabbled in was injecting decaying material into animals. Mm-hmm. To see if they got sick, to see like, okay, just because something is like dead and decaying, does that inherently make it dangerous? It's gross. It doesn't smell good, but how does that make you sick? Right. We still didn't understand, but he got the picture that it does make you sick. But it really wasn't until the 1850s when Louis Pasteur recognized invented germs.
Well,
no, but recognized that germs existed and that germs in food probably caused illness and developed pasteurization or the process of heating food to kill the germs. And then that's when we really started to put it all together.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks, Louis Pasteur. First pasteurizing milk and now this. What can't that guy do? He can't make us any money. That's the answer.
What can make us money?
Well, let's go to the billing department.
Good idea, Justin.
Thanks. It's the first time I've ever come up with it myself.
Let's go.
That's my line. The medicines that escalate macabre for the mouth. Okay, where were we? I know we were just singing the praises of Louis Pasteur, and I'm still a big fan of that guy, even after the commercial break.
So, you know, once we understood that inadequately prepared or cooked food caused disease, and we understood that there were bacteria involved, and we kind of got the idea of foodborne illness, you would think that would solve all our problems, right?
Yeah.
No. Because as we're moving into a time, and specifically we're talking about a lot about U.S. history right now, when food was being prepared in mass quantities outside the home. You know, you weren't raising your own animals and your own vegetables and all that and killing your own animals at home and preparing everything in your own kitchen. You were buying this stuff in stores. So it was being kind of prepared for you somewhere else.
Right.
And as far as what standards people had to follow in that somewhere else where your food was being prepped, I mean, there weren't any.
Everybody's trying to run a scam. Everybody's trying to make a quick buck.
Yes. Everybody's trying to put stuff.
The wheeling and dealing early 1900s. Everybody's on their grind.
Exactly. It's all about making money. It's all about capitalism. And it is not about looking out. It's a very much caveat emptor. Mm-hmm. Kind of these buyer periods, beware period.
These
of time.
Periods where regulation hasn't quite caught up with innovation pop up from time to time. And if you realize that you're in one of them, historically speaking, I really can't emphasize this enough. Make sure you take advantage, because people are going to get rich before John Law decides to catch up and start getting his, you know, his share, slice of the pie, and making a bunch of laws to keep people safe. So if you ever find that you're in one of those times,
if you're in a culture lag type where time in history,
innovation has not yet been outstripped by regulation, make sure you get them ducats. Get as much as you can get, as much as you can take. Save it, sock it away for a rainy day. And once John Law comes to find you, make sure you've moved your entire operation offshore so you can't even get one single taste.
That's a great reason to study history, so that you know when to take advantage of people in the present time, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's good. You got to know, strike when the iron's vulnerable.
I'm really glad that we're helping those people out.
So anyway, sorry. Go ahead. I'm just really jealous. I never got in on one of these, gold rushes.
Maybe you just don't have the insight, honey. So in the early 1900s in the U.S., we start, you know, there are smart people working for the United States government who start worrying that we need to find a way to regulate food quality. Now, what I want to talk about is it's a little removed from the idea of bacteria, you know, germs in our food. And I'm focusing a little more on other things that may have been in your food at the time. Mm-hmm. Specifically, there were a lot of preservatives and additives that were tossed in with foods that were sold that were not studied in any way or evaluated for what they would do to you. They were known to maybe make, for instance, there was a copper sulfate was used to make like peas look greener.
Sure, because that's important.
Right. Well, they sold better, so you would use sure. that. Borax was used in meat.
My wife.
They treated it.
Right?
No, borax.
Okay, got it. Sorry.
Nah, I love Borat humor because it's so timely.
Yeah, you can say.
Everybody really is into it right now.
You can say that joke was a great success. Borat.
Anyway, borax was used to preserve meat commonly. And again, like nobody was evaluating this stuff. Nobody even had to say that they put it in their food. They just sold it.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Here, eat this stuff, America. Deal with it.
It's weird to kind of think about. Like, we've grown up in a time I vaguely remember before nutritional labels. You probably don't, do you?
I don't really know.
No, I vaguely remember.
I mean, at like fast food restaurants, they didn't have to have them.
When I got started, it was not though. It just wasn't there, and there would be an ingredient list, but you wouldn't have the nutritional information. It's crazy to think there was a time period where it's just like the box would just say peas. I don't know.
Trust us, they're just peas.
And this is just peanut butter. Please enjoy it. What else is? I mean, doesn't matter. It says peanut butter on there. That's what you wanted, wasn't it? It's a nickel. Everything's a nickel. Nobody gets to complain.
Everything's going to get much more expensive eventually, and then you'll get to know what's in it, okay?
Yeah.
So there was a lot of concern at the time about these kinds of chemicals, and some of them are pesticides and toxins that may be in your food and if it's okay. So one chemist who is particularly concerned about it was Harvey Washington Wiley, who worked for the U.S. government, and this was before the days of the FDA, but would lead to the creation of the FDA. And he said, we need to study this stuff. And here's what he proposed. I want to get together a group of 12 guys. They've got to be vigorous and voracious, were his words.
Mm-hmm.
They all had to take a civil service exam. They needed to be screened for having high moral character.
Okay.
They needed to have reputations for sobriety and reliability. And they have to be willing to pledge for an entire year to eat only what we give them.
Okay.
And to be studied thoroughly during this. So they would come ahead of time to get like weight and height and blood drawn and urine samples and hair samples. And then they would be measured and studied basically every day before and after they ate all this food. And what he was going to do is poison them.
Great.
With increasing amounts of different compounds to see what happened to people. So like borax was what he started with. And that actually ended up being what they were most famous for, was eating a bunch of borax. I think Dr. Wiley was known as Dr. Borax for a while. But he did it with lots of different compounds. And this group of 12 young men eventually became known as the Poison Squad.
That's so rad.
So what's great is that men volunteered for this.
To get onto the squad.
Yes, because they wanted to join the squad. I found one of the letters that was written to Dr. Wiley from a young man asking if he could be considered to join. And this is the letter. This is, I'm quoting to you. Dear sir, I have read in the paper of your experiments on diet. I have a stomach that can stand anything. I have a stomach that will surprise you. I am a...
Try my stomach. It might surprise you.
I am afflicted with 7 diseases. Never went to a doctor for 15 years. They told me 15 years ago that I could not live 8 months. What do you think of it? My stomach can hold anything.
That's so rad. That's like the raddest. Like, put that to like a rap beat. Like, it's a really hard, like really, really tough line. Like, it's really, that's putting yourself out there.
I have a stomach that will surprise you. That was the first thing that Justin said to me that really piqued my interest.
Excuse me, ma'am. I have a stomach that will surprise you. If I just have a minute of your time.
Oh, do you? Tell me more. Buy me a drink. So Dr. Wiley put together his young, tough men. Now, a note I should say about Dr. Wiley, because
He hates Mega Man.
What?
Sorry, Dr. Light invented Mega Man.
Okay.
Dr. Wiley hates Mega Man. He's trying to kill him.
I don't know anything you're talking about, sure. Okay.
It's the year 20XX, Sydney. And Dr. Wiley's trying to stop Dr. Light and Mega Man.
Somebody's really enjoying this, I'm sure.
It's me. The search is over.
He
I have a stomach that might surprise you.
So Dr. Wiley was a smart guy. He worked really hard to improve food safety. He was a good scientist. One interesting note, he was a terrible chauvinist. He thought that women lacked the brain power of men, which is why there were no women involved in this. they at one point tried to allow a woman to be one of the cooks. The main cook was Perry, by the way. That's important to remember. That's the only name I know by Perry. Perry was the main cook. But he claimed that women were too dumb to even be able to poison people correctly, so we couldn't involve any women in the process. He was also fired by Purdue University, I think, for riding a bicycle.
That was strictly prohibited.
Which isn't really his fault, but I guess I wasn't dignified.
No staff of ours will be seen on a half car. What?
That's what bicycles are.
A horseless half car? The horseless half cars?
So an interesting guy. But as I said, he was a good scientist because he went about this experiment very rigorously. He started with borax. He fed them various amounts of borax. And you can find like a published like list of like their Christmas meal. And it ends with like how much borax was in with it. He went from there to sulfuric acid, saltpeter, copper sulfate, formaldehyde. He gave higher doses, took all the samples, monitored them, and of course, they got sick every time.
Right.
Eventually, different doses, the men would get sick, and then he would claim that, or then he would, you know, declare this was not something we should be putting in food. The media was following this. They went wild. They actually were where the name, the Poison Squad, came from. And even though a lot of these were trying to be suppressed by the food lobby in the U.S., these studies that he, you know, wrote, these papers, did leak out. And mainly because of the media, this got out to the public and people started freaking out and demanding that we do a better job of stopping this. Mm-hmm. And so from this came the Pure Food and Drug Act of 1906, as well as the Meat Inspection Act. Although I should note that part of this, we have to give props to The Jungle by Upton Sinclair.
Well, and there's a lot.
That was actually part of what, although that was not his goal, that is part of why there was regulation of the meat industry as well.
Well, and the Drug Act, part of it came from a lot of other sources too, yes?
Yes, but the Pure Food and Drug Act was initially called the Wiley Act. So I think we can say Dr. Wiley was pretty instrumental. The only reason that name didn't stick is Teddy Roosevelt, who got really involved and championed his cause and took credit for a lot of it. And he was really good at talking and, you know, making loud speeches. So he kind of ended up outshining Dr. Wiley. And so it became known as the Pure Food and Drug Act instead of the Wiley Act. But of course, these acts led eventually to the creation of the FDA and food safety guidelines, and Wiley being known as the father of the FDA.
Yeah, I mean, we you know, you give a lot of hard time to putting borax in food, but it did get us the FDA, and you can't really fault it for that. You know, it does have a silver lining.
I don't even know what to say about that. There is, I don't have it here. I can't sing it all for you because I don't know the tune. I try to find this. There is a song called "The Poison Squad" that they wrote about these 12 men who.
Oh, I thought you were gonna say they wrote about themselves. No, they're just really tripped out on borat one night, and then.
And they wrote a song about themselves called "The Poison Squad."
Check this one out. My stomach can't hold anything. Hey, that's good. That's a good one.
I have a stomach that will surprise you.
I've been puke free since 93.
That's 1893.
That's 1893, mind you. I want to say a big thank you to MeUndies. Remember, it's holiday time. Get out in front of this thing. Don't get caught by surprise. Go to MeUndies.com/sawbones and get 20% off your first order of the most comfortable underwear on the planet. Thanks to Maximum Fun Network for letting us be a part of their extended podcast family. Tickets for Max FunCon are on sale now. That is a annual gathering of delightful human beings that you can take part in. I want to let you know that I got a new podcast with my brothers and the guys who make the show The Worst Idea of All Time. It is an annual eternal podcast called Till Death Do Us Blart, where we watch Paul Blart Mall Cop 2 every year and release a review of it on American Thanksgiving. So the first episode was just launched, and you can find that on iTunes. Also, Candle Nights is an annual podcast festival that we host here in Huntington, West Virginia. And it is going to be on December 21st. And it is at 8 p.m., and that's going to feature Sawbones and also My Brother and Me, two podcasts for just one price, which I think, like I said, I think it's $20. But you can go to bit.ly/candlenights2 And you can buy those tickets. We're just about, I think, 60, 50 or 60% sold out. We've sold quite a few, so it's I would not wait on that too long. But now it is time to wrap up. We've been joined at the very end by our special guest, Charlie Gale McElroy. Hello, Charlie. How was your nap? Thank you for letting Mommy and Daddy do their podcast. I really appreciate it. She's just kind of staring at me agog. But I think that's everything. That's the taxpayers. Let us use their song Medicines as the intro and outro of our program. You can find all their stuff on, I believe, Bandcamp. Just search for the taxpayers, then buy everything that you legally can. And that is really going to do it for us. Seriously, this time. We're done. And until next Wednesday, my name is Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And as always, don't drill a hole in your head.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.